Hey everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Come This Far. It's a podcast I do with my friend Chris, where we have conversations with folks that we find to be interesting, intriguing, compelling, funny, smart,
inspirational,
uplifting. Did I say that already?
Maybe.
All of the above. Just got like good, just good damn people. And we have a person today, a friend of Chris's, who covers a lot of those bases. So maybe tell our listeners a little bit about Kate.
Gladly. Kate Milken and I have been friends for going on 2 decades. As long as I've known her, she's been a phenomenal conversationalist. She also has an amazing story and has done some really cool things. So I was excited to introduce you, Sean, to Kate and vice versa, and have her on the show. I think we spent most of our time talking about her experience with multiple sclerosis. So she was, we talked even about the initial diagnosis and what a kick in the gut that was. Talked about her osteopathic treatment of MS. And then we spent a lot of time partly because, I don't know, several reasons, probably your sort of entrepreneurial background, but also the work that Men Living does around peer support. Kate went and started this platform called, eventually it was called Moodify, which was a community building, moment sharing, peer support platform for people suffering or struggling with MS. Unfortunately, it's not still around, but so many lessons to be learned, so many great experiences that she shared with us.
Her energy, your attitude is infectious, and just her perspective on life is one that I tend to agree with. And it's, we talk about the entrepreneurial effort and what she did. It's a really hard thing to start a business on your own and maintain it and grow it. Most don't make it. But her attitude about it and what she was doing, as she, really was still struggling with MS, is inspirational.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you remember this. As we exchange texts after these calls, it's always fun to see what each other thinks about how the call went. And I think all of the calls, we've had 50 plus episodes, and we've always been really excited and everything else. In reference to Kate, you wrote, "I want to work with her in some way." So I knew minutes after we hung up with Kate that you were glad that we had her.
She's definitely on my list for sure.
Yeah. Yep. All right, well, let's get on with the show.
Let's do it.
People here,
hope you enjoy Kate.
This is what would drive Tyler Voy nuts. Look, Chris Lozier, see that open cabinet?
Oh, Kate, yeah. I kid you not. Manisha came in here earlier, and this thing, it's got a bunch of swimsuits in it. This was open, and it was stacked up because May had been in here.
Yeah.
And Manisha goes, "You can't do a call with that background." Same exact thing.
Tyler I would be the same way. Why is the cabinet open?
Well, we're married to two people who knew each other before we met them.
Exactly. They went to business school and we are the creatives.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Sean, meet Kate. Kate, meet Sean.
Hey, Kate. So nice to meet you.
Sean, thanks
nice
for having me.
Too. No, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
Kate, did you notice that we already hit record?
Yes, I did. Yeah, and I'm totally okay with that.
Okay, good. That's kind of how we roll.
Because I don't think it'll affect your professional reputation, the fact that you couldn't get the mic working. So, because Kate, we keep it all in. So,
yeah, man, I'm all good with that. I'm pretty good at accepting my flaws. Nice.
I will say that about Kate Milliken. I don't think there's much that she's afraid of. So, it's like, fucking bring it. That's it.
I got that. Yeah.
Well, we've already brought up the names Tyler and Manisha. That is not why we're here. Maybe we'll get into that in a bit, but maybe just for the background for our listeners. Yes, of course, Kate and I know each other. We're kind of connected in two ways, actually, both through, you went to Khan College, which is where Manisha went to school. And by the way, Our friend Christy Halverson was here this weekend, believe it or not. Nice. Small world. But also because we know each other because my friend, you and my friend Tyler Voy, fell in love, got married, had a couple kids. I just want to get it on the record that Tyler married way up. I love you, Tyler, but you won the prize here. So, and there's other reasons though why we're here, Kate. Been watching the things you do for a while, so much of it around your work with multiple sclerosis, and it's been a really public journey, right? Because you're vulnerable AF, as the kids say. I wonder if that's a fair place to start to hear about that journey. But before that, because you and I so infrequently talk, how are you doing? And then maybe the journey.
So I'm doing great. I turned 52 in January, and I'm finding myself, I live in Bronxville, New York. I am still married to Tyler Voy, happily. I still find him hot, which I think is important. I am now getting into the realm of having teenage kids. So I have a teenage son who's 13 and a preteen daughter who's 11. But you know, I live in Westchester, and I like to say that I have first world problems on a bed of joy. I'm pretty lucky in terms of the way I get to live my life. My husband works for Capital One, and it allows me now at this point in my career to kind of decide what I want to be doing and what I don't want to be doing. And all my projects that I'm working on are pretty meaningful. So I'm doing great. I do feel like hitting the realm of 52 has made me surprisingly pensive about time passing. I have a mother who's not well, and so I'm kind of mitigating her. I've become aware in this neighborhood that I live in, you know, when I moved here in 2014, there was somebody across the street that knocked on the door and was like, we have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old if you ever need a babysitter. And my kids were 4 and 2. And a couple months ago, I found myself knocking on the door across the street saying, if you ever need a babysitter. And everyone around me became who I was. So I feel, although I still feel like life is amazing, I do feel a little bit more weighted thinking about the passage of time, not necessarily in a bad way, just in a relevant way. And I'm sure you guys talk about lots of subjects in terms of parenting and living life. And that's one that certainly has been on my mind.
Dude, just as a side note, Sean, real quick, have I not brought this up on recent calls? The way the idea of mortality has been, and then maybe that's a little bit darker twist on time, but like the way that's come up, I even asked a chat bot psychologist about these notions that are going through my head. And the first thing the chat bot asked me was, are you having suicidal thoughts? You know, this, right. That, which is what therapists would do. But I'm with you, and I don't know how much of it's age. Sorry, Sean.
Well, what is on your mind? I'd like to hear your opinion on what mortality's been on your mind.
But before he does that, because it often comes up, I do have a quick aside. So when Kate talks about the fact that she finds Ty still hot, I'm thinking about something Lisa said to me yesterday when I was when I was coming out of the shower and I bend over to pick up a towel. She goes, oh, your ass is disturbing. I'm like, wait a minute. What?
Listen, man, all I heard was bend over and out of the shower. And my video producer sensibility said, clearly that wasn't the right angle. We can
so
that
so so I immediately think, oh yeah, I get, oh, you're still hot, honey, I get your ass is disturbing. So yeah, before we talk about mortality, I just want to slip that in.
Well,
hashtag and turn off the lights.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, yeah, I think what she was saying, Sean, is you're still hot. I think that's it came out differently, but that's what she was saying.
And just a bit.
Sean is, I give Sean grief about this. He's a wee bit older than I just turned 54, by the way, Kate. So happy belated to you. So we just survived another one. So yeah.
With a disturbing ass. Yeah.
I don't want to go too much into this. It's not like it's something that looms daily for me, Kate. I just thought it's interesting that you pointed out that that time occurs to you. I nerd out about it. I've said to people, you know, I just turned 54. The odds of me living to be 108 are very slim. So I'm better than halfway there, right? I know with a good deal of certainty that I'm better than halfway there. And that causes me, because I live in my freaking head, to do the math and to think about those things. But the good side, the good point about that, and I found this is true too, usually it's to a particular song by the Grateful Dead called They Love Each Other, which slows me down. And I've been doing, I think, a better job of saying, okay, enjoy the moment, be present. And you know, I mean, it's certainly not perfect. Anyway, interesting that you would say that. So back to you, because that's why we're here.
Well, it's actually a good segue, right? If you want to talk about moments of mortality.
Yeah.
I would say that one, my MS diagnosis was my first one. So I was in 2006. I was living this crazy life in New York. I'm a video producer. I had my own video production company. I was super busy. And I was single. And I remember one day waking up like extraordinarily tired, like just could not get rested. And I started having some tingling on my right side. But most disconcerting was that I had a delay on my left side. So even though my brain was telling me my feet to walk in a certain way, the left side was like half a second off. And by the time I got to a neurologist, I couldn't keep my balance. And the neurologist gave me an MRI and then called me and said, and this was a couple of days before Christmas, said, you have an enormous lesion on your C4 vertebrae. And in light of the location and the size of it, you could be paralyzed. So I've got a hospital bed waiting for you. Don't even pack. And you have MS. And the world of MS, it's an autoimmune condition where your body gets confused. And for whatever reason, it attacks itself. And specifically, it attacks your own spinal cord. And so what happens is it fundamentally leaves little holes in your spinal cord, which are known as lesions. And if you know someone living with MS, quite often, as somebody's older, you can see that they often can be more debilitated. And that's because if you equate your spinal cord to a garden hose, if your body is just putting these little pinholes in your garden hose, that when your brain is trying to give an impulse to, let's say, snap your fingers, the impulse gets lost over time. Mm-hmm. And everybody's course with MS is individual. So I ended up going to the hospital. I got a massive wallop of steroids, which made my mobility return, but I ended up feeling really bad. And I was able to go to one of the best MS specialists in the world at Mount Sinai. And I said, I'm so glad my mobility's better, but I feel really, really bad. And he said, well, that's the nature of MS. You can be holding a glass, and if you can hold the glass, we can't really help you. If you drop the glass, we can help you because it means that your body's having another attack. So if you have relapsing remitting MS, which is what I was diagnosed with, which is the most mild form, your body will normalize. It'll kind of be a 10, and then it will attack, and then you get it normal, and it comes back a 10. Mm. There's another type of MS called secondary progressive, where you start as a 10, and you have an attack, and you come back a 9, and then you have an attack, and you come back an 8. And then there's primary progressive, which unfortunately is just straight down. And that's kind of the hardest one to treat. So that was the beginning of my story. And actually, this part of my chapter has a great ending. But I will tell you that I do remember being in New York, and, you know, I was 35. I was single. Everybody's lives around me were kind of moving forward. I mean, I remember being on the phone with one of my best friends who had just gotten pregnant with their second child. And just having this moment of like, it is not going to work out for me, was pretty intense. And I think that, you know, I do feel, I think we're going to have a theme of like looking back and being hyper aware. Every person has some sort of moment where they recognize they're not on par with everyone around them. Mm-hmm. And then you have that moment of like, what do you do with it?
Yeah. So, can I ask two quick follow-ups, Kate? I don't know very much about MS, despite having a dear friend who suffers from it. So it's not like those are not like stages like that cancer has, where you might have one and it progresses to another thing. It's like if you have the what was the first one that you have?
Relapsing remitting MS.
Remitting, and so you've been diagnosed with that. That's what you have. That's what you'll always have.
Well, unfortunately, for some people, relapsing remitting over time will turn in a secondary progressive.
Okay.
It's all a crapshoot. And this is what makes MS so fucked up, is that you can look at your MRI and you can see that you have 25 little holes all over your spine and you could be acting pretty normally. Then you could go to another MRI and one person would have like literally a lesion, you know, the size of a dime or a quarter, and not be able to move. I mean, it's that random. So at first, trying desperately to grasp what's going to happen to me, not being able to get an answer. So cancer, especially breast cancer, here's what, you know, stage you have, here's what type of cancer you have, here's how it's going to play, here's what we're going to do. And there's a very good chance it's going to get better, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the path, even though for so many people, it's a very difficult process. In MS, you really don't know what's going to happen. So at first, this is terrible news. Like, you're just like, you know, I'm headed into disability. I'm headed into a wheelchair. It's over. And then over time, at least for me, I started recognizing that in as much as you can talk about what will happen, you can also equally then say, well, you have just as much chance that it won't happen.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, why do you assume it's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
What if
mm-hmm.
you said, what if it doesn't happen?
Mm-hmm.
And what that mental battle is. So I had one moment in my journey where I was adamant about continuing to move, because MS is a condition that stops you from moving. And I really love moving. I mean, I'm an athlete and I deeply care about it. So I would move every day. And even if I felt terribly, I'd walk around the block or whatever. And there was one, I guess a couple months after I was diagnosed, I went to a yoga class and everything was tingling. I felt terribly. And I was on my mat before the class started. And the yoga teacher said, what's wrong? And I said, I've been diagnosed with MS a couple of months ago. I'm very fearful. I'm going into an episode again. And he kind of touched my shoulder and he said, it's okay, like, you're here. And in that class, there was something about being there that I was like, I am here. You know, here I am in front of a mirror, you know, in a Warrior One pose, like, I am a warrior, kind of. And it was this transformative moment of really grounding myself into the present enough that when I'd, you know, walk down the street and I'd have a very negative thought, and out loud, I would say the word out, like, kick it out of your mind. Anytime I pass by anyone in a wheelchair, and this I still do, under my breath, I will say, not today. Mm-hmm. And what is the power of that? So I'll just give you the second chapter of this transformative year for me was.
Okay, can I interrupt you for 1 second? Two quick things.
Yeah,
we had a guest named Emma Varvalukas who works for this thing called the Progress Network, and she and her partner do a podcast called What Could Go Right, which I think is a really important framing, especially whether you have a chronic illness or not. I appreciate that you said that. Can we go back to the day you were diagnosed real quick? And I think this comes back to what we're going to get to around connection and peer support and everything else. But like, and I've never asked you this, I don't think, but were you alone at the doctor that day? And who was the first person that you reached out to, if so?
I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that question. I went to the doctor by myself and I got the news by myself. I was there, go to a hospital, don't even pack. The call, by chance, a friend of mine called me about 10 minutes afterwards as I was getting ready. And this is a friend of mine, a summer friend of mine, who I consider one of my deeper, oldest friends. And I let her know I was going to the hospital. But actually, at that moment, as a video producer, there was a video camera on my desk. And I literally looked at it and was like, I should take it. But I didn't. It was just too... It was too traumatic. So I ended up going to the hospital by myself. I did call my parents. They had to fly up from Florida. I think it was the 22nd of December. But what was very cool, actually, was that summer friend had taken it upon herself to reach out to the other six people in that posse, all of whom were very busy mothers in the tri-state area. All six of them were at my bedside within 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that was super powerful. Mm. And I spent two nights in the hospital. My parents came or whatever. But yes, it was a very lonely moment, Chris. like the reality of like, I can't believe, especially in New York. Have you guys been in New York in December? It's like yeah. mad festive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that type of different reality, I think, is very, very profound.
So Kate, I don't want to leave the mindfulness thing for a minute. I think that's really powerful. And we talk about it a lot here and even in Men Living. You know, the idea of you get this traumatic news and in your head, you're like, okay, I can go one of two ways. And the, you know, the idea of actually saying out when you have a negative thought or one that isn't really real, right? Because despite the fact that this is a traumatic situation, what you're thinking is not really real. You're just projecting, right? And so part of me thinks about that and says, well, if I had that discussion with you and you weren't there when if we were to have this mindfulness discussion, sometimes I think that would be me minimizing your situation. Does that, you know, having that discussion with you about being mindful of a really tough situation, is that good advice to have with someone who's experiencing what you're experiencing?
I think it's fair to recognize, in my experience, for people that deal with a moment of trauma like this, that it's a moment of mortality, that it's worth being like, you have permission to grieve.
Yeah.
Right. So in as much of saying like, you need to be mindful or whatever, the actual shock of getting that type of news, I mean, the irony, and I crack jokes, you know, Tyler thinks I'm a complete hypochondriac, which may be so. But I'm like, when you actually think something's wrong with you and you Google it and you're like, maybe I have MS, and then you have it.
Right.
That's like pretty intense.
Yeah.
So I think that in as much as you start allowing, you know, in my experience, and Chris knows, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, I talk to a lot of people who are newly diagnosed. And you have that moment where, in the same way that you can start talking to them about the potential of believing in the what ifs.
Yeah.
You can also say you have permission to grieve where you are. So even in that time, you know, I had a month and a half of like pure grief, you know, having moments of crying in the shower or just not believing that this is where I was at. And allowing that to be so. But what ends up happening, the question becomes, and maybe with the people you talk to about mindfulness, is how do you allow yourself the space to honor the negativity and the fear and all that, but keep it within the realm of not overtaking you?
Yeah, that's
and
a great
frankly,
point.
I can talk to people living with MS who are newly diagnosed, and within the first 8 minutes, I can tell which way they're going to go.
Yeah.
But I think you find that out from people.
Yeah.
Doesn't this speak to the source of the effectiveness of peer support, right? If I'm going to tell a newly diagnosed MS patient that, hey, it could just as easily turn out well, that's not believable. It would be like me showing up at a separation or divorce meeting that we have at Men Living and trying to advise people on that, or men in recovery or whatever. So, and again, this comes back to, I think, the beauty of my counterpain and the work that you've done and continue to try to do. So anyway, sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no, I think it is very clear, no matter what you're dealing with, that when you find someone that's lived it, nobody can make you feel better than more than that person can. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And the issue with MS, you know, people will say, and they'll talk about this all the time, oh my God, I can't believe it, but you look so well, or, you know, trying to say really nice things. And there are a lot of people that deal with very serious invisible symptoms that take that as an affront. I don't, but some people do, you know, it's like just not the right thing to say, even though you're trying to say the right thing.
Right, right. Okay, so we interrupted you. You were going to go into sort of...
Yeah.
I always feel when I leave this, like, you know, this tough part of the story, that the second part of the story ends up, you know, being pretty, pretty awesome. So I'm told by the Mount Sinai doctor, there's nothing that he can do. And I had a friend of mine who, long story short, turned me on to an osteopath. So I want to like preface this by saying this was in 2007. An osteopath has an actual medical license. He's more attuned towards complementary modalities, also kind of the skeletal system. And he, I went to him and he said, I actually really don't care that you have MS. He said, why do you have MS? You have an inflammation of the central nervous system. What is inflaming you? And he did a whole bunch of blood tests and stool tests or whatever. And he found at the time that I had heavy levels of mercury, which I actually think came from mercury fillings. But more importantly, that I had really, really bad bacteria in my gut. So are you guys familiar with the microbiome? You guys heard of that?
Yeah.
So this is in 2007. So like literally this guy, it gets this osteopath was fully convinced of the microbiome at the time. And he said, look, I'm going to wipe out, I'm going to get rid of your metal poisoning. Then I am going to kick out the bad bacteria in your gut. I'm going to re-inoculate your good bacteria and you're going to rebalance yourself. And then he said to me, and by the way, I went to med school and they taught me that you cannot regenerate myelin, meaning you can't fix the holes that are in your spinal cord. But I've seen it happen and I would plan on it. Oh, and even him having that realm of possibility, I was like, bring it on. So in as much as I continue to take my clinical disease modifying therapy, which is great, the clinical world of MS actually has drugs that are helpful. I also began, I had my mercury fillings removed by a homeopathic dentist in a very careful manner, and I took a supplemental regimen. And to be clear, this was a lot of supplements, very specifically prescribed. It was enormously expensive. And then I put a post-it on my mirror, and I was like, I am going to reverse my own lesion. And I literally walked around, and I don't even think I was into meditation and mindfulness at the time, but it became my mantra. Like I would just walk and say, reverse it, reverse it, reverse it. I did everything to a T. And at the end of the year, I went back to, for my Mount Sinai, my MRI, and they pulled it out and there was nothing there. And here we are 13 years later, proving there is a correlation of the microbiome in MS and that you can regenerate myelin.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to the show. Please consider following us or maybe just sharing with somebody you like. This episode is being brought to you by Half Acre Beer Company, makers of Daisy Cutter Pale Ale and many other excellent ales and lagers. You can find them in Chicago's Bowmanville neighborhood and at halfacrebeercompany.com. Now back to the show.
So where did you find this guy?
He was a block away from my apartment in New York. His name is George Kessler. He has since retired, and he was sensational in light of how we work together.
So what does all that say for your diagnosis?
Well, it's a great question. So my neurologist likes to say, I need to remind you that you have MS. Like, I don't care what you say, you have MS. And I was not comfortable rocking the boat, so I have really stayed with the medicine, and it has been, I'm now at 2023, so, you know, I went through a good 16 years of having nothing, and last May, all of a sudden, I started having some weird symptomatic stuff that started happening in a very specific way when I was moving either downhill or jogging. Something changed. And it was super uncomfortable. And one of the things that's been amazing is when I was diagnosed, I immediately called the MS Society and I was like, hi, I was an on-camera reporter. I'm a video producer by trade. If you ever need somebody to interview people, make shows, I'd love to do it. I ended up doing a lot of work for the MS Society and I got to talk to kind of the best in terms of MS researchers. And one of the things that has been noted, which actually they can't get a lot of funding behind, is that a lot of women in their young 50s with a hormonal shift get kind of a seismic symptomatic sweep. Something emerges with the hormone shift. And so there I am, like the neurologist was right. I still have MS. And we went and we did a MRI. You know, I was probably getting them once every 2 years, which is quite a long duration. But we went. And what they realized is that in, so I thought I'd been lesion free since 2023. It turns out in 2012, they had taken an MRI of my thoracic spine and there was a shadow, which they just assumed was a shadow. It actually was a small lesion. So it came up again in 2023, and it makes sense. I'm dealing with symptoms from that thoracic lesion, but we call them electrical storms. So it's clear my MS is not progressing, but I am having some sort of symptom stuff that's coming with hormones. And that is put me into the longevity space of, like, wow, the brain is so incredible that it's able to compensate around damage until it can't. And how do you try to make that better?
So you were basically in what I'll call remission.
100%.
For 16 years. No episodes, no nothing.
Nothing.
And back to George's regimen for you. Yes. Was that, I mean, were you, Mike Counterpain, were you talking about that on the site with the folks that were there? Were there others that participated in his regimen at all?
I was. So I started an online community of people living with MS to kind of talk about moments and how they felt over time. And I was always extremely vocal about my journey with complementary and conventional modalities. And in the beginning, you know, in the early years, I mean, even the Mount Sinai doctor, when I told him what had happened, said to me, oh, well, you know, it must have been the clinical drugs, which is a pretty arrogant thing to say.
Shocker. I know.
Yeah. And he talked to a board member that was like, and said to him, like, I have no idea what happened. And I, you know, the issue with it, Sean, is that you end up over time, I was really lucky enough to afford it. And if you try to be empathetic, it's like you tell someone that if they take a lot of pills, they're going to cure, you know, get themselves in remission.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's expensive. And there's no clinically proven, or there hasn't been a lot of proven success until pretty much now. Now it's beginning to be more clear.
Well, given that you attribute some of your positive results to this osteopathic approach, I'm assuming that you would also credit the peer support and the community building and connection that you created through My Counterpain and Nutify for also some positive results. Is that true for you? And
100%.
This is where it's at for us. I mean, this is what Men Living exists to connect men and provide these kinds of supports and love that, you know, we're a little slow on the uptake, but you are ahead of the curve.
Well, I do feel like even though I didn't grab that video camera in that exact moment, I did go back and I actually made a 50-minute film called Kate's Counterpain a few years after I, you know, got to a better place. And I threw it into a counterpain is an old-fashioned word for a patchwork quilt. And this was kind of like I literally had 32 mini films that were like little patchwork squares that you could click into. It was really beautiful. It doesn't exist anymore. But in that, I think there were 65,000 people that found it organically through a platform called Blip. Do you guys remember Blip? I mean, it was like a precursor to Vimeo. And out of 65,000 people, there were 70% that watched all 50 minutes of the film.
Wow.
So, and it was a story of, you know, exactly what we're talking about. So that certainly brought people into the mix. I think the coolest thing, you know, that all of us are trying to do is that if somehow you can bring someone together who's incredibly vulnerable to say that you understand that with that person sharing their own human moment of honesty, that it really kickstarts the process of healing. And when I took Kate's Counterpain, I then transitioned it to a startup called My Counterpain. And I built this beautiful moment sharing platform where not only could you post a video, but you had to tag one of 13 emotions, how you felt making that video. Mm. So it immediately put people into a reflective mindset. And what was really cool is it would graph your emotional journey. Mm. So you could literally see someone who did 20 posts in one image, see them be, you know, sad, scared, lonely, angry, for the lower ends, then overwhelmed, stable, aware, happy, hopeful, grateful. And you'd watch that journey. And ultimately, you know, we never formally quantified that angry, sad, and scared were low, and happy, hopeful, and grateful were high per se. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in my experience of the users that we had, when you watch people start from those very scary emotions and find ways to hit the gratitude when they moodified grateful, you know they had made progress in their healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, early in the first few minutes of the podcast, I think you mentioned your mom is struggling a little bit, and you used the word, I think, to describe yourself as pensive these days.
Yeah.
Is that right? It struck me because on a recent podcast, we interviewed a couple, one former Navy SEAL, another guy who has a startup called Pensive, P-E-N-C-I-V, that is very similar to what you built. And I just can't imagine, what I imagine is that all the folks that used My Counterpain.
It was originally called My Counterpain, and the
I gotta stop saying that.
It's okay. The verb of what you did was moodifying. I actually own that word. And it's so awesome that I almost don't like to use My Counterpain anymore because, you know, I think that moodify, if the startup had gone differently, could have been a common verb.
Yeah. Well, and back to, I mean, I just feel like there were probably people that were heartbroken when they lost that vehicle for support. And I know that the demand is still out there, and I'm sure there's a lot of other folks trying to scratch the same itch. What are your thoughts on that right now? Is like how strong is that need for this type of support?
The good news is I think the need is huge. At the time I started My Counterpain / Moodify, when you were in the kind of Silicon Valley, you know, online community thing, it was all about hockey stick growth. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, oh, you have a successful tech startup if you can get a gajillion users. And we wouldn't do that. I mean, we asked 8 onboarding questions for people that came on, which created the most extensive moment-specific library on the planet. So you can go to Moodify and say, I'm going to find a 35-year-old in New York with relapsing remitting MS who's on Copaxone, who's scared. And you would literally on the activity feed get that exact confessional moment. And connect that way. So I know how valuable that was, but it wasn't when you're looking at, you know, investors or whatever at the time, super niche marketing wasn't where it was at. And in fact, my favorite statistic about what we did at Moodify is we had 5,000 users in the MS community. We piloted it in other ones as well. But in that, the super users who were part of Moodify moodified at least once a day for 10 and a half minutes on average for over 2 years. So they created this extraordinary healthy habit. We went for a second fundraise. It was very hard to monetize because you couldn't bring a pharma into the mix because that would seem like you were selling out.
Yep, conflict.
Couldn't monetize it properly. However, last year, I ended up in my journey, I ended up meeting a guy named David Petrino, who runs the long COVID clinic at Mount Sinai. And one of my investors was nice enough to give a grant to Mount Sinai, and we ran a 3-month pilot in long COVID. And the people that used it in long COVID, we had 30 people, had all been diagnosed in March or April of 2020. So they were super sick. And that shit is real. And these 30 people got on board and they moodified for a period of about 6 months. David Petrino took 3 of the videos to the White House to show what it was like for someone to try to get coverage on their healthcare, you know, the job issues that they were doing. Like all that stuff is real. You know, I would just say for me personally, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, maybe the timing would have been different if I could have kicked it back, but you know, my life kind of took a different turn. And I, you know, somebody once said to me in an investment meeting who was worth a gajillion dollars, he said, "It's too bad you weren't a first follower." So the idea of being like, God, I'm on the
forefront. I hate those assholes.
Oh God.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. Like my timing and everything we did, I think, led the way for what's happening. And I'm so glad people are finding themselves in safe ways. The question I would throw back to you guys is, in light of all the people you talk to, you know, I do think the whole realm of social media has gotten much more out of control. So finding those beautiful super niche communities, I actually think is harder.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you where my head goes, Kate. I know this will resonate with you. You no doubt remember when Chris Thiele took over Prairie Home Companion and did Live From Here, which yeah. I thought, so Chris Thiele, mandolin player, Sean, Live From Here was the successor to whatever. I thought that was the greatest live sort of musical periodical ever. And then it stopped, and partly because of the pandemic. And I always thought, fuck, if I was a billionaire, I would fund that thing indefinitely. And I think the same thing about Moodify. I'm like, what did we ever think about going the 501c3 route? Is there not someone out there who does have that size balance sheet who would fund this thing as a public good, you know? Right. I don't know. Did you consider
yes.
that?
I mean, well, that's what happened. So actually, one of my investors is a billionaire, and he did find a way to contribute the 3-month pilot through the nonprofit of Mount Sinai. The only reason why I started my counterpart in Moodify as a for-profit is because the first person that believed in me mandated it for the investment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and I have regrets, and that's where, you know, as a businesswoman, understanding what's important or what's not, I can safely say that it's not about the money for me. And, you know, I wish that we had been in a different place where I could go to stages all over the world and convince people to be vulnerable and share their moments using the medium of video or text, and really talk about that power and never talk about how much my company was going to profit in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, Kate, I've always found you to be fairly convincing. So there's no doubt that you can do it. And at the time, you had a few other things going on in your life. So no judgment here.
Yes. Yes. Well, look, I'm really glad to see. I think you're absolutely right. You know, it is interesting in the world of, you know, whatever, you know, in some ways, I think it's almost easier. I mean, you guys are trying to solve the problem of being a guy, right? It's almost easier to be like, oh, I'm going to go to a community because I have a stage 3 cancer. It's almost easier to talk that way compared to actually just being real about your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. Before I go there, I want to ask, I just want to say you should check out Pensive. So Pensive is interesting app. It's PENCIV. What's interesting is, Jinyoon really created it as an alternative to social media, to your point. He calls it a social journaling app, and it's all about defining your mood. And so you'll see all the, you're going to be shaking your head, but it's a wonderful thing that somebody's doing that. The other question is, as you ask me about, you know, what we're experiencing being a man, I have a question for you first.
Go.
If you know kind of in the ballpark, how many men participated in My Counterpain versus women? Cause I watched your videos and I saw that you went and did a trip with a bunch of women. And I'm just curious how many men were there sharing their mood.
I would say 30%.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is pretty good, I think.
Which is not bad. Yeah. Which is not bad.
The other thing, for what it's worth, I know what you saw. I had a 7-minute trailer, that was, 7 women, and it was actually really cool. My Counterpain.
It was great.
And by the way, you can't see it. I could bring it over, but in my back right there, that long piece of art.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll get it for you so you can see the picture. But I know the podcast can't see this, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's a very selfish podcast. Anyway, we do this for ourselves. So
yeah, right. I had it made. This is my last post. And this is me videotaping my users, how I had to shut it down and why I was doing it. And then there are the replies.
Wow.
So super, super powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So again, what was your question?
Oh, well, I would say that actually the vulnerability of admitting as a man that you have fears or you don't think you're doing things well.
Hmm.
Are you?
Yeah,
feel
I mean, I think the whole concept, and I actually wrote this today in the newsletter. I mean, men and women both are, you know, deal with the negative effects of social conditioning, right? And actually, I wrote about it today as it relates to women in the what I'll call the beauty industrial complex and the whole issue of aging and what you have to do to look and stay young, supposedly. But for men, I think it's just, okay, can we just create the spaces and sit and have conversations where it's like, okay, you can be vulnerable. You can let this go. And for some, it's tougher than others. And, you know, our work is to bring more and more into the fold to say, it's fine. Just have it's regular to have a conversation. And just because we're brought up in the society that says you can't do it, a lot of that stuff is messed up. So, you know, we just want to offer you a alternative that we think will allow your life to be more full and more complete and more connected because you're showing who you really are versus some model that somebody tells you you have to be.
Well, but I think what you said before, Kate, is also true, where if you're presented with a space to where you're able to address an acute ailment, whether it's addiction or divorce or being a veteran or some other part of your identity with peers who suffer the same ailment. Suffer is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. Right. I think that is easier than just showing up and being like, oh gosh, life was hard today or I'm busy. And that's part of, I think, what we've tried to do more and more of. So in a way, it's like there's all these sort of verticals within Men Living that are like a Moodify in a way. I mean, we don't do all the technical stuff.
No, of course. But I actually think it comes down to building community. And one of the things I have, you know, I think you always have in moments of reflection or in therapy or whatever, you really think about trend lines. Like, what have you always done in your life, you know, that's been important to you? And certainly I can relate that I really love building community. And specifically, I have become hyper aware of the lack of the feelings of neighborhood, of, you know, how many people, when you ran out of your eggs for your cake, would you actually go knock on the door of the people around you? Like, I'm asking you guys, would you?
Oh, there's 10 houses that we go to regularly for butter, sugar, brown sugar.
Okay, so you're very lucky. Yeah. Sean, you feel
very
the same
lucky.
Way?
Yeah, I do. I feel the same way. Yep.
But also, I know it's unusual.
That's not so at all.
Yeah.
So that whole idea of local community, and ironically, now that I'm not doing Moodify, I'm doing a myriad of kind of specific projects, including running the communications for my local church. Now, I'm not a huge Bible person per se. In fact, you'll appreciate that I have the Bible for Dummies on my desk here. But I am a real fan of the church as a place where people discuss faith and they come together intergenerationally. And it's been super interesting. One of the things that I've been doing is we've had a survey going on and I've gotten to do stakeholder interviews. So calling congregants and asking them about their church experience. And it turns out we have a new women's associate minister, pastor, girl, woman, who has been starting some Bible studies groups with women. And having spoken to a bunch of men on the phone anonymously, they want it too.
Yeah,
they want a nighttime group where they can not only talk about issues of faith, but talk about their challenges.
Totally, totally. Two quick things to follow up on that. A, I realize that my block is an anomaly, and the ability to go to have that freedom to go to 10 different houses is worth it to me to not have closet space. So there's a sacrifice there that I get that's in short supply, and I love that is a cause of sorts. But I want to ask you guys a question, because I mean, I think that all the things we're talking about with Moodify and Men Living and Pensive, I mean, we're creating these spaces where people are increasingly able to be vulnerable. But I also think this is a long game here. Like, I think our young people need to see their parents, and probably especially their fathers, at least for sons, be more open and vulnerable and emotive and communicative. So I think I'm not saying it can't happen in real time, but I just think that the way we raise kids and educate kids is particularly important for the future of everything. Sean, you kind of gave me a sideways glance.
No, totally agree. I mean, I'm just thinking Derek Thompson just wrote a piece in The Atlantic about how we don't hang out anymore, and particularly
I love that. I read that piece.
Yeah, young people. You know, I was gonna say I hate always bringing it up, but I don't. I mean, it's kind of the phone's is poison. I mean, it's kind of damage. And if we don't manage it well, it's a really bad thing. And I think it's keeping people apart rather than bringing them together. And so, Kate, I don't know, how are your kids dealing with their relationships and their networks? I think you and Chris, your girls are on the younger end of the spectrum. What would you guys say?
You want to start, Chris?
I feel like so to your point, Sean, you're never out of the weeds. Even adults struggle with this, right?
For sure. Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like through no sort of, thing that we did right, our kids have sort of managed it pretty well. Maybe give some credit to the schools they went to, and maybe we did a few things right. But yeah, Kate, why don't you, I would love to hear what you say, and then maybe
first of all, I'm very blessed that both my kids have tons of friends. So like, let's start with that. They both have really good social connections. I also live in a town called Bronxville, New York, that's a square mile. And in as much as you bailed on the closet space, Chris, we don't have a yard. I live on a 3,500 square foot house. It's beautiful, on a third of an acre. And the reason why we did that, and by the way, I live on a yellow brick road. No joke. Matter right now.
I've been to your house.
Yes. And my kids, since the age of 6, have been able to walk to town and to school by themselves. So we did it. So every day we have between 4 and 14 children that march up here for their snacks because we're close by. So the friend thing I think is really cool. I will be honest, my son, I think, is more into kind of sporty boy stuff. Mm-hmm. They do have some social media and some gaming in the mix. It's my daughter who I actually think I'm watching her. She has a vanity table with tons of Drunk Elephant products. She spent a lot of time in her room on Snapchat. She has one of the highest snapping scores. She looks at herself a lot. There are moments where she's not interested in talking to me. There's drama. Sometimes they'll come in, I can see she's been crying. And I actually believe, did you guys see that amazing Dove commercial of the really popular girl on social media over time that got the eating disorder?
Yeah.
So recently she did come to me and admit to me that over Christmas, she saw my screen time passcode. And she had been changing her own laws because I do crack it down. They have limits. Mm-hmm. And I'm appreciative that she told me the truth, right? But she had been completely binging. And I'm at a crisis point with her where I recognize there's an element of her life I don't understand. And I also have to acknowledge I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that one's a little harder, I would say. I will tell you, conversely, that as a result of working for the church, somehow my daughter goes to bed filling out a gratitude journal and reads from the women's Bible every night, which I think is my favor.
Is it the women's Bible for dummies or is it the straight up women's Bible?
She might be better than I am at the Bible.
It's interesting. The other thing that you
it's a women's Bible. Does that mean it's abridged? It's been edited?
It's a great question. I need to follow up with that. You put it in the show notes. I'll let you know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Sounds
please
good.
Please do. Please do.
Yeah.
It's sad about the shortage of eggs and butter and sugar in Bronxville too. The fact that you can't just go.
Well, my choice. We just had new neighbors and I marched right on over.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Figured you would.
So I'm living what I believe to be true. But it is sad. There's no doubt about it.
Kate, it's so good to be with you.
Thank you for having me.
You may be aware that we need to ask 3 canned questions at the end of this podcast.
I'm ready.
Okay. They don't change.
I didn't prepare, by the way. Go ahead.
Can I just say that this flew by? This was ridiculously fast.
I looked down. I'm like, wait. I wish I didn't have to run. I don't know if you guys have hard stops. I do, but we could definitely do it again because I could talk to Kate for a long time. Yeah. So, okay. So here we go. Here we go. And I was the quip I was going to make as I was thinking there is Kate said she didn't prepare. I know she didn't prepare because she called me at 20 minutes before the start of the show saying, hey, I'm sorry I'm late. Have I missed my window? So I know you're just good. Good. All right. First question. What do you wish you would have told your 10-year-old self?
That there's enormous power in being different.
Smiles. I love that. Second question is, and I think you mentioned, you've mentioned several mantras, maybe at different parts of your life, but do you have a mantra these days or one that you've stuck with for your entire life?
Believe in the what ifs. I love that one. I think that, you know, you can define, you know, find positive possibility. I mean, there was a quote I gave to someone that I had found and I can't remember it, but it's like, when you're told you can't do something, it's like, I'm sorry. There are six billion people on the planet. Find somebody else.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm. And I really do believe there are no hard stops. You know, I also believe I'm a huge fan of the fuck up. And I will tell you that, you know, before I like to say that I had three monster curveballs in my life, MS was the second one. The first one was that I went to Groton, which is this like high-end New England prep school, upper echelon at the time. And I got rejected from my first choice of Dartmouth University. And in that time, or Dartmouth College, in that time, I thought I blew it. I felt like Groton treated me like a second-class citizen. I ended up going to Connecticut College, which worked out great. I met Manisha. I got to play lacrosse all 4 years. I got to take advantage of the academia in the way that I wanted. I had total control. It worked out great. And I am finding right now, as I'm surrounded by Bronxvillians who are hardcore about where their kid's going to school, I have a completely different attitude as a result of that. Like, my kid isn't even looking at Groton. And I'm so grateful for that. Like, I'm not stressed about where my kid's going to go to college.
Dude, I've experienced the same thing. For the longest time, I thought, well, my kids are just going to grow up as type A people and they're going to go to some great school. And by the way, it's way fucking harder to get into the schools that some of, you know, than it was when we were, old people were that age. But there's so many different paths to like happiness.
So many. Right. So many.
And those mistakes are really great. And by the way, the third monster curveball was I had a broken engagement. I was supposed to get married to somebody else and it didn't work out. And
God. I didn't know that. And B, thank God.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how it always is. And that's where our, you know, the other podcast that we'll do, we'll talk about how to allow kids to fail. Right.
So Kate, that means I'm opening up real quick. Because I know you got to go, but that means no regrets, right, Kate?
No, it means no regrets. It's like believing that everything was meant to be as it should. There were hard lessons. It was deeply painful, but there is a richness that all of us can understand in light of moments of setbacks. And that's where, you know, this generation, the immediacy, expectation and immediacy is not allowing people to mitigate disappointment in a reasonable way, where the ramped anxiety is like, oh my God.
Right. So, not only that, but these things that they have at their disposal are avenues for leaning on their ailments and their diagnoses and their loneliness and their mistakes.
Right. You know? And what could come out of a negative is actually a lot of positive.
Oh, amen. Yeah. Okay. That seals the deal. We got to get back together. The last question though, of the three, Kate, what do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
I mean, I really love being a connector. I think I would say, you know, I feel like my intentions of, you know, I've read, you guys know Adam Grant's 5-minute favors. I'm a huge fan of the 5-minute favor, which means you actually go out of your way to do something incredibly nice with no expectation in return. So maybe they would say that that woman, either number one, was a reframing Jedi. Actually, that would be a great one, because it's true. You can reframe anything. And actually, Tyler will get really mad. He'll be like, we have a great marriage. I'm like, for now. He's like, really? I'm like, I know. And then the second one is, wow, that woman was unconditional in the 5-minute favor. Would be pretty cool too. So
these are so many themes that come up for us all the time. I mean, first of all, the selflessness component is everything. Yeah. I mean, it's come up when we talk about 12 step, is the 12 step being like the sort of empathetic outward facing step. But this notion of unconditional, we had a guest recently, our friend John Duffy, who talked about how our love cannot be contingent, which means it's got to be unconditional. And so I feel like that's the way you want to go through life and be remembered. Right.
Well, the irony is that if you're really unconditional, no one will bring it up, but you get the gist.
I don't know. I never understand why love has to be modified with unconditional. Love is love. I mean,
right. As it should be. And I will say one more thing before you go, which is I happen to be in a program of sobriety. And the AA program, the coolest part about that is, you know, I just chaired a meeting and it's a 3-month commitment, which is a lot, once a week, and you have to find a speaker. And the AA sensibility is you always say yes. So every time you ask someone to be a speaker, they're like, yes. And I'm like, man, if the world worked with the culture of yes, think about how incredible that would be.
Yeah. Think about what could go right.
And how much, how the world could move faster in the coolest way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I got. I'm so happy to meet you, Sean.
Yeah. Kate, it's a pleasure.
Your white beard with your clear glasses and your white. I mean, you're looking sort of California new age.
There's just got back from California.
You did? See? Yeah. It's called a snag, a sensitive age guy.
I've learned so much in the last hour.
I'm a snag with a disturbing ass.
I love you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. You guys are doing great work, and it's really fun to be part of it. So thank you.
I love you too, Kate. Thanks again for joining us. Talk soon.
Okay. Over now.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Party on.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out, mnliving.org.